Welcome to Lifelines Radio, a production of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Federation. Today, I am joined by a 21-year veteran of the Federation, our Executive Director, Michael Chicochopo. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Maria. Hello, everybody.
Michael, why did you decide to undertake pro-life work?
Well, it really wasn't my idea, to tell you the truth. I had been a hospital administrator for 31 years. I had 21 years in hospitals in the Air Force. I had 10 years in Catholic health care. And I was happy doing what I was doing, but then suddenly I got a calling from the Lord. It was very, very compelling in late 2001, shortly after 9/11, frankly. And it was a call to go after this position as Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation, which I never had considered doing because I was a hospital administrator. But it was so compelling, they offered me the position, and I started in January of 2002. So when I do retire at the age of 70 on December 31st of 2022, it will have been 21-year career in full-time pro-life ministry, which never saw it coming, to be honest with you.
Now, explain what the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is for those who are not familiar with it.
Well, the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the largest single-issue pro-life organization in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We are non-sectarian, so we're not affiliated with any particular religion. We have people of all faiths and beliefs who are welcome into our organization. And we're nonpartisan, so we're not affiliated with any political parties. We welcome people of all political parties who want to defend the right to life. And we're nonprofit. We do education of the public about the truth behind abortion, infanticide, and euthanasia. And we advocate for law and public policy that protects innocent human life.
Now, why does the Federation deal with those issues of abortion, infanticide, and euthanasia?
Well, these three issues are the issues which people who identify as pro-life can pretty much all agree on, that they are direct attacks on innocent human life. In our culture here in Pennsylvania, most people are completely against infanticide and euthanasia. I mean, people on all different sides of the spectrum agree that those are really attacks on innocent human life. And both of them are illegal. They're criminal offenses in our state. So we want to make sure that that stays that way because every now and then you have people who want to go after and actually go after infanticide and euthanasia. But most of our focus and most of our time is spent on the issue of abortion because abortion is still legal in Pennsylvania through 6 months of pregnancy, even after the overturn of Roe versus Wade and the Dobbs decision. 32,000 babies are killed every year in Pennsylvania. This is pre the overturn of Roe. And so that's where most of the killing goes on in our state, and that's why we focus so much on abortion.
And to give people some idea, across the nation, since that tragic U.S. Supreme Court decision known as Roe versus Wade back in 1973, more than 64 million children have lost their lives. It's really devastating.
That's absolutely true.
Now, Michael, what is the role that chapters play in the Federation?
Well, the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is really a grassroots organization. It was formed back in the 1970s from people from all over the state who wanted to do something at the state level for pro-life. And so we're made up of tens of thousands of Pennsylvanians from all 67 counties in Pennsylvania. And in about 40 of those counties, we have volunteer chapters, we call them. These are groups of people who work at the local level to do the same thing we do at the state level by helping to educate people in their communities about abortion, infanticide, and euthanasia, and to help try and advocate for law and public policy that defends the right to life. Chapters hold educational events. They do all kinds of different things that way. They also have a presence, many of them, at their county fairs. They'll set up an education booth at a county fair right out there in the public with all different kinds of groups that have their county fair education booths and groups that are selling things. They're not there to sell anything. They're just there to help people understand the truth about abortion, infanticide, and euthanasia. And many of them organize local pro-lifers physically and virtually with internet connections, with websites, with emails, all of those different things to help defend the right to life at the local level. And we help them to do that, and we help them organize to do that.
Now, Michael, on what occasions did your work take you to Washington, D.C.?
Well, the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the state affiliate of National Right to Life, which is headquartered in D.C. So I have had the privilege and the honor many times to take the seat of Pennsylvania on the board of directors at National Right to Life. I've been there many different times, and many of the meetings have taken place in Washington, D.C. So we have a very strong network across the United States here at the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation with sister organizations in every state. And so I know my counterparts in many of the states, and I can turn to them. Whenever we're looking for help on things, I can turn to my counterparts and other chapters, other affiliates across the United States for help. Of course, another reason why I would go to Washington, D.C. over the last 21 years would be for the National March for Life, which brings together pro-lifers from all different organizations and all over the country. Frankly, I've only missed a couple marches for life in the last 21 years, and it's always a very thrilling experience to be there with hundreds of thousands of like-minded pro-lifers who do all different kinds of things, but we're all there to defend innocent life.
Why did the Federation decide to undertake town hall tours?
Well, for many years, the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation held pro-life educational conventions at various locations around the state. We would find a hotel with a conference center, and we would set it up with lots of different pro-life speakers. We would pay speakers to come in from all over the country, and then we would bring in pro-lifers to go to those conventions and get their information. And this was very, very popular before the internet and social media came about. I mean, this was hugely popular as a way for people to get the latest pro-life information and education. But in the early 21st century, people began to get most of their information online, and frankly, it was expensive for husband and wife and maybe to bring their kids to travel to some hotel someplace else in the state and spend a weekend there. Paying for food, paying for gas, paying for a hotel bill, paying the registration fee to get into the convention. And so these conventions were not so popular anymore. So by 2011, we decided that we would take the pro-life education to the people in their own counties. Rather than expecting them to travel to get their pro-life education, we did the traveling. And so myself and our education director every year would have a tour and go around the state from anywhere from 8 to 12 different stops along the way, where our chapters would host us to come in and put on a mini convention, so to speak, to give people a lot of information right there in their hometown. And we've got many, many people in the 85 different cities that we've been to with this pro-life education. I say cities. We've been into some pretty rural areas, too, with this. People have come out and been very, very happy to get their pro-life education that way. But, of course, when the pandemic hit, getting together that way really fell out of favor again. So we haven't had a lot of town hall activity since the pandemic came along.
But we actually started a Truth U tour where we went around to different college campuses, and that's been very successful.
That has been, absolutely.
You're listening to Lifelines Radio, recorded by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation and JMJ Radio. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, and today we are speaking with Michael Chico Chopo, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Now, the Federation has had some memorable banquets over the years. Tell us about the latest one, which featured Dr. Ben Carson.
Well, it's true that we started offering these pro-life banquets in 2003, the year after I became the executive director. And these are meant to be educational, motivational, and inspirational events. And they've included a wide range of keynote speakers, including pro-life activists, including pro-life religious leaders, including pro-life public office holders, and pro-life celebrities. But nobody seems to be able to compare to Dr. Ben Carson, who spoke in Hershey for us in October of 2022, to the largest banquet we've ever had. We had 1,200 people showed up for this event, and that was basically double the highest number we've ever had. Usually if we got in the 600s for our annual pro-life banquet, that was a big number. Dr. Carson was a big draw, and he really, really did an outstanding job. In fact, at this time, we have his speech, the video of his speech, on our website, and I would really encourage anyone who hasn't had the opportunity to go to that banquet to go to our website at paprolife.org and click on the events and the video of Dr. Carson. I've watched it a couple times since I saw it in person, and it really is highly recommended. People will get a much, much better sense of why we need to do what we do when they listen to Dr. Carson.
Absolutely. Now, Michael, why is it so important to assume the role of servant leader in the pro-life movement?
Well, servant leadership is a style of leadership which I've practiced in pro-life and in my years in hospital administration. And basically, with servant leadership, the leader's job is to lay out the organization's vision based on the mission that the board of directors establishes for the organization. And then next, the leader has to secure the resources, the funding, has to hire the staff to carry out the mission and the vision. And then, once that's done, make sure that everybody knows what their jobs are and has the tools and everything they need to accomplish their jobs. And then the servant leader's job is not to go around every day and tell people, okay, you do this, you do this, you do that every day, because everybody knows what their job is if you've done the leadership job well. The main thing is that when somebody has an obstacle to accomplishing their mission, then that's the servant leader's job, is to remove obstacles so people can do their jobs. And we do that for people at the staff level here at the headquarters in Harrisburg, but we also provide that kind of servant leadership to the people in our chapters all across the state. When they've run into problems where they're not able to accomplish what they want to accomplish and they call us and say, is there something you can do? My job is to try and find a way to help them accomplish what they need to do. And so that really is the way it's done. And I think it's the best style of leadership.
I agree. Now, where were you when you first learned about Roe versus Wade?
Well, it was January 22nd, 1973. I was a 20-year-old sergeant working in an Air Force hospital at Ramstein Air Base in West Germany. And when the news hit us in Germany, now for the people who are listening in the 21st century, it may be hard to imagine how hard it was to get news when we were in Germany in those days. News didn't travel the way it does today. We had our newspaper on the base was a government newspaper that was called the Stars and Stripes, and that's how we got our news. And typically, the information would show up in our newspaper days after the news actually took place back in the States. And I remember hearing that the Supreme Court had legalized abortion, and me and many, many of my like-minded friends at Ramstein in those days in our community were just appalled, obviously, and we assumed that the Supreme Court had just made a mistake. Clearly there was some mistake here, that you can't be killing innocent human life in the womb. And we thought, you know, they're going to realize the mistake, they're going to realize it pretty quickly, and they're just going to overturn the whole thing, and we're going to go back to where we were before. Of course, that didn't happen that way. And later in that year, that same year in 1973, I was on a bus tour with a number of other Air Force people from my base, and we went to Dachau, to the Nazi concentration camp at Dachau. And we stood in the gas chambers where so many human beings had brutally murdered so many other innocent human beings. And I remember, like it was yesterday, and I just thinking about it, I remember standing there thinking to myself at first, oh, human beings would never do this to human beings ever again. And then suddenly I remembered that we have abortion going on in our country, and that that's exactly what was going on, that human beings were brutally murdering other human beings, and that history was repeating itself.
And where were you when you heard the news that Roe versus Wade had been overturned?
Well, that date is June the 24th of 2022, and I was attending the National Right to Life Convention in Atlanta, Georgia, with Right to Life colleagues from all over the United States. It just so happened that that was the week that we were scheduled to be meeting all together. And that morning on June 24th, when the Dobbs decision was announced, we were all together. And it was honestly very surreal, because National Right to Life has been on the forefront of efforts to overturn Roe versus Wade for 49 years. And the fact that that news would break when we were all together, gathered together from all over the country, was really, really surreal, is the only way I can put it. Within 10 minutes, I was being interviewed live on internet news in the hallway outside of a conference room where a conference was going on by a reporter from Newsy.com. And one of the things she asked me live was I surprised that Roe versus Wade had been overturned? And I said, I wasn't surprised at all. In fact, I always knew that Roe versus Wade would be overturned. The only thing that surprised me was that it took 49 years for it to happen. And Maria, you were there at that National Right to Life Convention in Atlanta, and it seems to me you might have done some interviews yourself that day.
I did. Within an hour of the announcement, I was doing interviews from my hotel room via Zoom, and it was very surreal. And it was such a blessing to be at the National Right to Life Convention for that incredible event. And I'll never forget it when the tears came to my eyes as I was congratulating other people for this monumental achievement. And I actually have a ring that I got from the Culture of Life company, which has 2 years on it, 1972, the year before Roe versus Wade, and 2022, the year when Roe versus Wade was overturned. And that's very special to me. That we were able to mark that milestone.
Really was.
What special challenges do we now face in the post-Roe era?
Well, I think the biggest challenge that we face, and you might chime in on this too, because I know you're on the forefront of what's going on out there, but to me it seems like our biggest challenge is the misinformation and lies that are constantly being put out by pro-abortion advocates and their surrogates in the mass media. I mean, there is so much misinformation and lies, and it's just, it's incredible how they have the guts to do that. I mean, they just put out so many lies, and have, because of that, you know, worked up people in society who maybe in the past really never even really thought about abortion, but now all of a sudden, you know, they make this sound like some right has been taken away from people when there was no right there in the first place. And yet people who don't even understand what abortion is all about seem to be siding a little bit more with the pro-abortion people than I ever expected would happen.
And I think one of the challenges we face, too, is that a lot of people thought that once Roe was overturned that that was it, that abortion would end, and that's far from the case. We're just at the beginning of the pro-life movement, really, in Pennsylvania and across the nation.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I can tell you, and you know from doing many of the town hall tours with me, Maria, that from the very beginning, one of the staples that we always talked about on our town hall tours was why we needed to prepare for the overturn of Roe versus Wade. And we tried to help people understand for years that overturning Roe versus Wade would not make abortion illegal in the United States, that all it would do would be to return it to the states, and that we would need to have the right people in place, in office, at the moment Roe versus Wade is overturned, so that we could go back to protecting innocent unborn life. Again, like you said, many people didn't understand that. They thought, oh, abortion became legal when Roe versus Wade was decided, so when Roe versus Wade is overturned, abortion will be illegal, and obviously that's not the case.
Michael, what were some of the highlights of your 21 years at the Federation?
Well, every day, honestly, I begin with prayer, and I ask the Lord what he expects of me that day. And then I ask him for the wisdom and the resources to do what he's asking. And so for the last 21 years, that's what it's been all about. It's a day-to-day thing. And every day that we can accomplish what he wants us to accomplish is a good day. And every day that we fall short of it is not a good day. But the last 21 years has not really been about me. It's been about him. But I was very, very humbled in 2007 when Pope Benedict XVI awarded me papal honors with a Bene Morente medal, which is a medal that popes give out to people for good merit, is what it means in English, the Latin translated. And it caught me completely by surprise. And the fact that the work that I was doing and so much of it behind the scenes would be recognized by the Holy Father just caught me completely off guard and really made me realize that I really was doing what the Lord wanted me to do. But it wasn't time to rest on my laurels. It was time to do even more. And so since 2007, we've accomplished an awful lot.
We certainly have, and it's a credit to you and to your leadership that we've been able to do so many wonderful things at the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation.
Thank you.
Now, what words of advice do you have for someone interested in becoming active or more active in the pro-life movement?
Well, I think the first advice I would give them would be to pray. You know, we're not a sectarian organization, and people have various ways that they pray, and I think that people need to pray about something like that. And then the next thing I would say to do is talk to somebody who's doing pro-life stuff. Talk to somebody who's actively involved in it. I know over the last 21 years, many people have come to me and said, I would like to get more involved. What can I do? And I'm always happy to share some thoughts with people in that case. And then once they feel like what they're being called to do and they have a better idea of how to go about it, then the thing is, you just have to do it. You just have to step forward.
And I wrote an article recently that was published about how everyone has something that they can give to the pro-life movement. We all have individual skills and talents, and the pro-life movement can really use those to further the cause of life.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, Michael, what lies ahead for you?
Well, at this point, We live, obviously, in the Harrisburg area because this is where the job is. And most of my kids, actually, and grandkids live in western Pennsylvania. So we're expecting to, at some point, relocate out to western Pennsylvania to be closer to them.
That's wonderful. And I'm sure that they'll appreciate that as well.
I hope so. I will appreciate it, that's for sure, because I just miss them. We have five grandsons, and it would be nice to be able to go to their games and to go to their events on a regular basis.
And I'm sure that you will continue to update people on social media about your athletic accomplishments. You are a marathoner, you're a runner, you're a swimmer, you're a cyclist.
I am. I'm a half marathoner, though. Let's not go for the full marathon. But in my old age, the Lord has blessed me with good physical presence and the ability to do these things. And as long as He allows me to do it, I enjoy it very much.
And a lot of people take a lot of inspiration about that. I mean, we talk about celebrating life, and certainly you celebrate life through your athletic achievements.
Every day.
And if people want to connect with you on social media, what should they do?
Well, if people want to check me out on Facebook, it's just search for my full name, Michael Chico Chopo. They can get me that way. And they could do the same thing on Instagram.
I think you need to spell your name for people.
I will do that. It's C as in Charlie, I-C-C-O-C-I-O-P as in Peter, P as in Peter, O. C-I-C-C-O-C-I-O-P-P-O, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L.
And I have to say, after 20 years, I still struggle to spell that.
Well, there's only four letters, C, I, O, and P. You just got to get them lined up correctly.
That's for sure. You've been listening to Lifelines Radio. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. We've been speaking with outgoing Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation, Michael Chico Chopo. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life. We'll see you next time. Please tune in again.